Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
It's Riyad Mahrez! That's just stunning! Manchester City in microcosm!
Holy crap! It's Rog! It's Thursday and we are back after watching Manchester City channel, well, the Jacksonville Jaguars in terms of epic second half comebacks with Riyad Mahrez in the role of Trevor Lawrence. Waffle House for dinner for Riyad tonight it is then. What did we just witness together? Oh, I'm still not quite sure. I hope you know this is a place where you can come on and tell me and ask your questions as we do it live here on AMP, the live audio platform that allows you, dear GFOPs, to participate in the conversation. For those of you with us on AMP right now, you know the routine. Request a call in. We'll move you up to the stage. Come be with me. Once you're there, just stay muted until we call you, then hit that little red microphone on the right to unmute. If you're not on AMP and you're listening on the podcast, do you even, Conte? Download the AMP app on your phone to ask your question live and join us in this community. It is one of the most beautiful things of the post-game experience. I always feel sad at the final whistle. Another game gone of the number we will share together in our lives. But to know we're going to hit this AMP, it thrills me with joy. And I want to begin with this toast by raising this third, first bud of the day. God, I need this to the ridiculousness of this season's bottom half at the table, whereas tabloid reports are, and there's always an element of truth in, a fraction, a figment, they're going to both feverish levels right now to predict the demise of David Moyes at West Ham as his team have imploded ahead of the game this weekend against Everton. If he loses, he will be fired. Podcaster says, don't worry, he won't lose. But they're also trying to ship that Everton are on the brink of replacing manager Frank Lampard with their former boss. Yes, the same man, David Moyes. Probably because the Everton board are trying to work out exactly how they can hire a new manager without gaining any of those pesky benefits of the new manager bounce thing. I just raise this bud to chaos and emotion and irrationality and the cycle of life. I will say about David Moyes at Everton Football Club, I like David Moyes a lot as a human being. But him being reappointed after being at Goodison Park through some scrappy years of making do with very little and making wonders happen on occasion between 2002 and 2013, it all reminds me of a life wisdom that English comedian Matt Lucas dropped on me when he came on the Men in Blazers show. Matt said, you meet everyone twice in life. Once when you're on the way up, and once when you're on the way down. And the way Matt told the joke, he ended it by saying, so it's good to be back. But the moral of that comment, really important, is treat people the same with kindness in both moments of time. And Tottenham Hotspur tonight experienced both moments in time, the surging joy and the feeling that anything is possible. And then the reality, no, everything isn't possible. You are what you are. Manchester City 4, Tottenham 2, a rescheduled game. caused by the Queen's passing back in September. Two teams who you have to remember were so proud back then, but they now limped in, having both lost in epic derbies over the weekend. Manchester City talking about how they wanted to score more goals from more players. They gave Julian Alvarez his second Premier League start. KDB, who missed training this week for personal reasons, was amongst those who dropped to the bench. And this is amazing. Feels like a science fiction piece of writing when I say this, even for Manchester City, for both teams, really. This was a must win. And Spurs, God bless, opened optimistically. They won their share of possession. Bentancur, so reassuring to have him back. It was magnificent, honestly, to see it for the first time since mid-November. But City soon drove Tottenham backwards. And Pepper said before the game, I found this really fascinating. He said, how do we take more possession, which we have, and turn it into goals? He said, we need runners, not just Erling. If we had just Erling, he'll be controlled by two or three central defenders. We need to get more players in these possessions more often. And honestly, first off, often they really did not. Haaland looked drained of confidence, 9 touches in the second half. Just before the half hour, Miguel Delaney tweeted, at 309 minutes without a goal, this is now the second longest drought of Haaland's career since he left Norway in 2019. I honestly felt sad. There was a moment when I felt sad for Haaland. He looked bereft, like a US number 9 who's on the field, not to score, just to run around and do stuff. And the closest City came from on goal was a deflected Rico Lewis drive that Lloris did well to get down low to tip aside, and surprisingly for when the opportunity to fling the ball somehow into his own net. Spurs, we've come to know them as a second half team, but they performed the inexplicable on the stroke of half time. Edison, who in his own quiet way has become a strangely erratic goalkeeper, passed the ball, let's just say it was in the vicinity of Rodri. Was it a pass or did he Lloris the ball in the vicinity of Rodri? Whatever, Rodri never stood a chance, lost control, ball came out to Kulu. Probably one of the last players you want to receive the ball in that situation. He stepped forward and just arced a shot with perfection into the corner of the net. Goal for Spurs, bigger goal for Arsenal Football Club, and it would get worse for Manchester City. Harry Kane wouldn't give up with the ball on the right-hand side, won it from Rodri, thrashed it at Edison, punched the ball right out central, Edison Royale, delivered a header that was as precise as the barber's job on his sideburns, artfully shaped. Rare in football, Edison on Edison violence. And Pep, on the sideline, had a face on him, like he was trying to keep tranquilo. Remember, Pep does not mind the score. He has won things. Hashtag Pep to US men's national team. It's happening. There were boos ringing out at halftime. Yes, boos. Astonishing. Boos for a team that you have seen win the title for 4 years out of 5. But yes, boos. Wasn't sure if it was City fans or was it Spurs fans, bummed that the team were prevented from scoring again. At Kevin Herb tweeted us to say it was actually Spurs fans booing their own side for helping Arsenal. Whatever, it was remarkable to witness. Bentancur, so key for Spurs. His presence meant that Harry Kane didn't have to trot back his deep to get the ball. Spurs, so much more, a full 11 with him on the field. Got to say, halftime. Yes, we saw this together. Did we see this? Did we witness this? Did we share this? City 2-0 down at home at halftime. It's just such in the modern period. We saw it a lot when I was a kid, when it was City. But now it's City. Now it's this City, Pep City. 2-0 down at halftime. We are just not used to seeing it. And I did wonder, what would Pep even have said in the locker room at halftime? He doesn't have teams that are 2-0 down at halftime. Does he even know what to say? Or does he just randomly read sad poems out of Pablo Neruda's 20 love poems and a song of despair? I bet you Phil Foden loves him some Pablo Neruda. But whatever Pep did, it worked. Mahrez, unstoppable, caused chaos down the right. Lloris flapping, Julian Alvarez swooped in. amidst the slop, smacked it home. A palate cleanser of a goal. City back in it. And within 2 minutes, there'd be another. From the most unlikely goal scorer on the field, Erling Haaland. Mahrez again causing the chaos, nodding it across the box. Oh, Erling Haaland, the agony of impotent youth over. First goal of 2023 is 22nd of the season. A header from the closest possible range. But you could just tell just how hard dude had to work to keep a grin of relief off his face as he charged back to the centre circle. And God, it was slightly insane to witness this, to comprehend this, to understand this. No subs for City, no changes at all on the field. Just somehow Tottenham had found a way to have their second half in the first 45 and played their first half in the second. That's the only way I think we can. There's almost like a hole in time where they flip the halves, because the game boiled down to a desperate knife fight in that minute. Both teams desperate, less to win, more not to lose, to be mocked, to be memed, to be dragged. Kulo hit the post. But then City, again, and it had to be Mahrez, again, swooping in from the right, cutting in, driving low and hard, near post, slight defection. But still, Lloris, that man, still so handsome. But can we be honest? Is he less an elite goalkeeper? More a Tottenham fan with access to tickets? They're getting really, really close to the action. In 18 minutes of second half football, Pep had turned that City frown upside down. And I want to know, all those City fans, and if any of you are City fans on this call and booed the team off at halftime from your television set, how do you feel booing the team off in that first half, watching that 18 minutes of wonder in the second half? Surely they should be punished in some way. I just don't know how. At ThinkBear63 tweeted us, Tottenham Hotspur, are they the LA Chargers of the English Premier League? I just do not know. And watching Pep punch the air when Mahrez chipped in the fourth, it was clear to see his concession of the title last weekend. Was it all a ruse? He still believes, and who would not believe? But wow, City, what a flipping narrative. At halftime, they were looking down the barrel of three losses, all comps on the trot. But now 3 points at the final whistle, and suddenly everything feels possible again. City fans will bellow for Manchester United this weekend in their forthcoming rumble, epic scale, against the Arsenal, with City welcoming the league leaders, no doubt salivating at the prospect of that game, February 15th. Bring it on. Arsenal fans, I don't know how you're feeling. I know this game was not about you, but it was very much about you. My mate, Michael Cohen, not that one. You've heard about him a lot, old GFOPs, my Arsenal supporting mate. At halftime, he texted me deliriously, oh, when the Spurs go marching in. And at full time, he just tweeted sadly, I just got Spursied. And I felt for Tottenham some night, one which reinforces the brand and not in a good way. Kane's contract up in the air, Sonny looking dead-legged and really bereft, the shadow of himself. And I feel an agony in particular for Antonio Conte, who talked in a run-up to this game about what a traumatic personal period this is in his life. He's mourning the recent deaths of three close friends, Gian-Piero Ventrone, a trainer at Tottenham Hotspur, Mihailovic, who just passed, and of course, the great Gianluca Vialli. He said, they've led him to an important reflection on my future. I just feel for him mourning his friends while running a football team far from his wife and his daughter who have stayed in Italy. Just a predicament which forces us all to think, how can one possibly grieve as a Premier League manager, a brutal, unforgiving, ceaseless task in which fans, at the end of the day, care only about 3 points, not about personal pain. To you, Antonio, to you, with love. And after the game, seconds before we got into this moment of the day for me, World Cup champions Julian Alvarez took off his shorts, gave them to a fan in the crowd wearing a River Plate jacket. That's right, left his shirt on. but got right down to his skivvies to sacrifice his shorts. Either way, just either avant-garde tactics from Pep Guardiola or a Speedo Mick tribute. And if you want more footballing underpants insight, go and see our Trent Alexander-Arnold interview, which is all over our YouTube. If it's not yet, it will be very soon. A few more footballing notes before I take your questions. We've got a full stage here. If you do have questions, just wait for someone to exit the stage. We've got time to unpack it all with you about this week, the weekend ahead. Epic, epic stuff. Talk about it all. Arsenal versus Manchester United. What a humdinger we have ahead of us. Huge news for Arsenal fans today. Leandro Trossard, Brighton's ophthalmology enthusiast striker, has reached agreement to sign for $33 million, 7 goals in 17 appearances for Brighton this season. I adore this player. I think he's some pickup for Arsenal. Just a delirious, intelligent, cutting runner and finisher. The depth Arteta's team cried out for and that Todd Boehly allowed them to have. In the other massive game, Liverpool will face Chelsea in that mid-table rumble. Watched around the world, I am fascinated watching the Liverpool ownership transition process. And if there's conversation or questions about this, but there's been a lot of rumours over the past 2 weeks about a Qatari imminent takeover at Liverpool. Sources from Fenway Sports Group knocked back that speculation over the past 2 days. It looks ever more certain that FSG will hold on to majority control, take on minority investors. But the spectre of the whole Qatari thing and watching fans, you know, the agony of this season, the trauma, where's the new signings? You know, the Liverpool have taken, it is a special club. It is, you know, it's a unique club. It is built on remarkable values. The club have taken the moral high ground for so long for a reason. And I'm fascinated how Liverpool fans feel about the prospect of sovereign wealth fund money. You're like, yeah, it's the good kind. You're like, not us. That is not what we do. That is the predicament for Liverpool fans. We've got John Oliver coming on soon, and I can't wait to talk to him about that. Today in transfers, I just mentioned Chelsea. Chelsea unbelievably said to be close to signing another attacking midfielder, Noni Madueke, 20-year-old English attacking starlet who plays for PSV. None of this makes sense to me either. That's a position, obviously, they have a stockpile of. Hard to believe that it's what Graham Potter asked for. Give me another one, which suggests either his time is limited or Todd Boehly is a mad king. You decide. West Ham appear to have got themselves that goal-scoring gerund, Danny Ings, for $19 million, which has led to a resurrection of the old meme, David Moyes shouting down the phone, screaming, I said signings, not sign Ings. However, got to tell you, bite your arm off for a Danny Ings. That gentleman does know how to finish, or at least against Everton Football Club. And talking about craziness, there was a lot of football madness today. I'm not actually sure if it was football or just madness, geopolitics or global brand burnishing. Yes, you may have seen this. A Riyadh 11, the dramatically named Riyadh season team, played Paris Saint-Germain. What are the odds of that? In a friendly today at the famed home of football, King Fahid International Stadium in Riyadh. I'm sure it's Lionel Messi's dream since he was a little child to take the field at King Fahid, a game which included such stats as the four most followed football players on Instagram are playing in the same game. Cristiano Ronaldo, 536 million. Lionel Messi, 421 million. Neymar, Mbappe, yes. Yay, global platforms. That's why we watch. It was weird crap decoding the magnificently awkward handshake between Messi and Ronaldo just before kickoff. Very brief. Wonderfully pained and cold. Lionel Messi scored after 3 minutes. I was honestly sorry and a bit sad that dude did not decide to play the game wearing the bisht that the Emir of Qatar gave him as a humble brag. It would have driven Ronaldo wild to see the GOAT just taking the field and swanning around in his bisht. Ronaldo dribbled whenever he could. There was one run where he nutmegged someone in the middle of the pitch and then a teammate swooped in onto the ball. Ronaldo actually called him off so that he could continue the dribble. There were backheel passes from Ron. There was a lot of flair. It almost seemed like he was worried He wasn't going to score, so he tried to highlight reel it where he could, show he's still Ronnie, still got it, had a really pained, awkward smile on his face through a lot of the early going. Constipated Ronnie smile is the Ronnie smile I think we're going to see a lot in the next 2 years. He did score twice, I should say. He did seem genuinely gleeful when he got his second. Like, I have more than Lionel Messi. That means something to me. All the big players went off in the 61st minute and the game disintegrated. I mean, who really tuned in to be in to see a Riyad 11 take the field, Shauna Run-Run? But at the end of it, I honestly felt a sadness. I don't know about you. I don't know if anyone even watched this game. But yes, it was a slightly surreal, cheesy, fabricated event. But it made you realise it could be the last dance, the final time we get to see these two giants of the game, the two men who have dominated the men's game for so long, play against each other. A reminder, we should take nothing for granted, even football's eternal reality. Though I did love this Instagram comment from @SharksOnMars. Ah, this isn't the last dance. The last dance will be LAFC against Miami in 2025. Whatever, the best part of this whole ridiculousness, Salt Bae was not invited. There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. We are into the question portion of this show. A reminder, if you're on stage, just stay muted until we call on you to unmute. Just get your digit, push it against that little red button and give it a jam. Please keep those questions coming. We can only have five people on the stage at once for me, but we will move you onto the stage when the questions are asked. So hold tight. We will get you up tonight. Oh, let's do it. Let us begin this night of wonder by bringing up an old friend. Oh, it's Andrew Millington.
Hey, Raj. Still calling from Corpus Christi. How you doing?
Oh, gorgeous, Andrew Millington. It's always great to hear your voice, mate.
Likewise. My question, I was going to ask about the West Ham Everton fixture, but you already addressed that. So as somebody who has a club that is run by a Lemony Snicket series of unfortunate decisions right now, how is it possible for Chelsea to double the revenues of every club in Europe while still staying within FFP regs? They're at $190 million for just this window so far, and there's still, what, 12 days left?
12 days left. Who knows how many left-footed midfielders Todd Boehly is going to be able to bring in before the end of the transfer window. Look, it's a very complicated question that you're asking. You know, part of me wondered whether Burley's aim to double his revenue, as he proclaimed when he took over the club, it feels like years ago, it's really only been 7 months, is to stockpile players. Something that Abramovich did, which was to try and spread so many bets, be almost like a roulette player that's just putting chips on almost every bloody number, stockpile so much young talent. Hope that it appreciates, you know, the whole loan army, the whole loan system, and make a lot of money by wheeling and dealing way outside the Chelsea first team squad. Look, a lot of it is to do with the player sales of the last 2 years. Chelsea have flogged Tammy Abraham, Kurt Zouma, Fikayo Tomori, Timo Werner, Mark Guehi, Emerson, Eden Hazard, which is still being amortized from Real Madrid, which has produced an incredible profit. Remember, they inherited the Roman Abramovich loan army and were able to really wheel and deal. So there's the legacy of that. What I can say is I am not, as you know, an expert in player amateurization. I am not an accountant. Anybody that works with me at Men in Blazers knows that the reality is my eyes glaze over when I see a spreadsheet, just to be completely candid. I'm actually writing tomorrow's newsletter as we speak. I took a quick break for the football, which is always a joy. There's an incredible article in it, which is worth getting hold of, by the great Swiss Ramble, who, unlike me, is a real accountant, and he doesn't just play one like me on television. It's an article entitled, "Will Chelsea's Transfer Spend Break Financial Fair Play Rules?" It's a really deep dive, and he breaks it down in true minutiae. But the thing I do think about is that not a lot of people are talking about how all of this must be experienced by the players who are involved in this on that training field, you know, the ones who've been there through Tuchel into Graham Potter, from Roman into the Mad King, Todd Burley, the Elon Musk of the Premier League, and just this constant influx, this new culture that has to gel mid-season. It's like suddenly having, you know, the competition externally for Chelsea mid-table right now is the pressure totally enormous. The competition internally, just a whole lot of, you know, hello, my name is Mikhailo Modric on the training ground. There are so many new kids in school. It's more actually like when two high schools merge, and the insecurity amongst the players who are there. We know, you know, Chelsea, like Twitter right now, chaos leads to instability. Undermining the confidence, the belief, the depth chart in this way mid-season. Teams are workplaces, ultimately. They are collectives. And I find it, you know, particularly, I obviously think, as many of you do on this call, like, what the hell is Pooley thinking at the moment? Dude, you look at his arc. Signed, stayed at Dortmund for a while, then arrived. There was no youth at Chelsea when he signed. By the time he arrived, he was buried down the depth chart in an avalanche of youth, managed to survive and thrive fleetingly in a Linsanity kind of way, retrospectively, but got to the top of that pile. You know, all the triple name players, your Ruben Loftus-Cheeks, your Hudson-Odois, he saw them all off, managed to define himself, fell down that depth chart again. But just a constant, it's almost like being in a ball pit, drowning in a ball pit of new players. Injured now, having just got himself three starts on a row, thinking about his future, thinking about his pathway. What does this say to him? What does it say to Ziyech? What does it say? And what are they all? Declan Rice looking at Arsenal, looking at Chelsea for so long, if we're being candid, but now thinking, do I really want to go there to that crap fest of chaos? It is a strange moment of transition, a strange moment of change. Change, yeah, is about breaking things. I'm sure that's the like come out of Elon Musk. Todd Boehly's mouth a couple of times as he's making all of this plan. But it feels honestly like the lack of strategy here, bringing in Potter, Potter like one kind of leg out the door, bringing in so many players, flinging this thing together. Unless the strategy is to buy so many players, you've essentially bought every single attacking left-footed midfielder so that every other team has an inbuilt weakness. I do not know what it is, but it is a strange and deeply, I mean, as an American watching it, is a confounding thing, a challenging thing. We can talk about it. I don't know if there's any questions about Jesse Marsh and what he's up with. Americans in general, we have the world of football has a very thin patience for us. And watching him do this at Chelsea is utterly, utterly confounding and befuddling. Come on up at Shaheed 11. Come be with us. Tell us where you are and what's your question.
Hi, Rog. My name is Jen. I'm calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Where about in Boston, Jen?
Just outside of Boston, a little north of Boston. In a town
called...
Do we
have a town name?
It's called Billerica. No one really knows where it is. It's near Lowell, if anyone knows where Lowell is.
Oh, Lowell. We all know Lowell. We all know Lowell. But Billerica sounds like the next young Revs Academy player who's about to move to Belgium. to the Belgium First Division. And try. You're essentially in Mewis sisters' territory.
Yes. I mean, I hope we got someone we can send to the Revs. One could only hope. There's not much going on here, so.
That's why we are here for you, and it's a joy to be with you. Tell us what your question is.
So I am a Tottenham fan, and so I am commiserating a little bit this evening after today's loss. So my question for you is, what do you think is going on at Tottenham, and where can they go from here? Is it a club culture problem? Is the team not gelling? You know, with these rumors that Kane is going to leave, where can Tottenham go from here? Is it a player problem? Is it a manager problem? What can be done? Because it doesn't look good.
Oh, first of all, it could always be worse. You could be an Everton fan. I want to make that totally clear. So whatever feels dark and gnawing and just, you know, an agony, today, you have been on a journey tonight in Lowell, and I feel for you. I do. I'm not trying to diminish it, but do know this. It could always be worse than your predicament. I'd bite your arm off for predicament as an Everton fan. But what is going wrong at Tottenham? Tottenham per se in the micro, this is a squad that has been heavily reliant on a handful of players, and that core is, you could say, reaching the end of its cycle, has reached the end of its cycle. It's really hard to see Sonny, a player who seems to run on gasoline of joy and wonder. And this is a man, when you speak to him, who really savors every single second, his camera celebration. Why do you do that, Sonny? I asked him, and he said, I don't take any of this for granted. I'm trying to remind myself, my family, the nation watching at home, to take a picture of each goal, savor that memory. It's a gentleman who's aware how high he's gotten and how fleeting those highs are. Sonny, looking dead on his feet, overplayed. Lloris looking shattered. A warrior who has fought one too many battles. And then the big question mark is Kane. This is a question for him, but it's probably an agonizing dilemma for every Tottenham fan. The future, will he sign a new contract? Will he leave? What a remarkable journey in the modern time he's been on as a kid, who has really defied there's apex predator teams in football. There's a hierarchy, and the reality is you are meant to come through with a club like Tottenham. You're meant to leave a club like Tottenham when you're as skill-soaked as he is. You're meant to go to Real Madrid, to Barcelona, to Bayern Munich, You're meant to go, and this hurts, but you're meant to go to Manchester City. You're meant to go when they were at their peak in their Roman years. You're meant to go to Chelsea. And he didn't. You know, he dreamt of a Tottenham that was then, as he should have done, that Tottenham of Pochettino was a true collective who forced their way through into the elite ether. And I'm sure Kane's dream, I mean, I know it was Kane's dream, because I've spoken to him, was of Tottenham evolving into that reality. Tottenham tried to create a financial revenue stream, which was unique and different. They had to play catch up with those super teams. They gambled on the stadium, but it was a stadium with a built-in difference to other new stadia. Half the stadium was football, half the stadium was our football. You know, this NFL stadia that was going to bring them another income stream, a really incredible income stream. When they have plans of hosting so many bloody NFL games, and even a team moving there permanently down the road. Then COVID hit, and I felt for Tottenham. COVID hit almost as soon as it opened this beautiful new stadium, and it denied them that double revenue stream that they banked on. So Tottenham's finances are not of the elite ether, and the elite ether is determined by revenue. You saw the Deloitte richest clubs in the world list was published. Was it this morning? Was it yesterday morning? Huge number of English teams dominating the top 20, over half for the first time ever. Tottenham, I think by memory, were ninth, possibly joyously ahead of Arsenal. But they have financially got to work out how to close that gap. COVID hit them incredibly hard. And so they had to rely on that core. And Pochettino almost closed the gap, but he did it with alchemy. He did it with levitation. There were no transfers. They still, you know, the Champions League final days, just the few fleeting, the sense that they could win the Premier League title. Those years when Eric Dyer seemed like an elite footballer, but it was all alchemy. The finances were not there to back it up. And the squad is thin. Conte, I adore Conte. I do. He's probably not a cultural match. Tottenham is a club that needs what Pochettino had, true collective culture building. Conte is a manager who can take an elite team and turn them into a winning team. It was almost a reaction to the carousel of managers that had come post Pochettino. So you have those uncertainties. You have the uncertainty of Conte being there. You have the uncertainty of Kane being there. So do elite players look at Tottenham and be like, that's the club I'm going to join? Or do they say, let me see where the pieces fall? And I think it is a modern football thing. I'm probably telling you more than you want to know. But I laughed about Everton at the start of my answer. But Everton are one of a cluster of clubs in the Premier League who know they have no chance of happiness, winning anything. When the Premier League kicks off, they know economically, they know the quality of the football squad they have. They know their only fight is a fight against relegation. Tottenham don't have that predicament, but Tottenham are trying to fight in it to get a top four place where there were five teams trying to squash in there. But now there's Arsenal and now there's Newcastle. And so the difference between happiness and misery, and you're currently feeling misery, and between progress, that repeat top four, that guaranteed top four, that's almost, for you, in the same way as it is for Everton fans, a different kind of Sisyphusian challenge. But that is the loop that you are currently caught in. And it's very, very hard to break it. Ultimately, we don't cheer for outside investors. That's not why we watch football. But it's not really a Conte thing. It's not really a Will Cain repeat his manager. Will Cain sign a new contract or not? It's neither of those two things. It's really, and I apologize if you can hear Martin Scorsese in the background, it's really about whether the outside investors come in for how much and how much. How can Tottenham upgrade? And until they do, you're going to be forever in that rumble. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news for you, you incredible human being. And I do, I've got a real soft spot for Tottenham, and I hope that there are better days ahead. Quick shout out for the GFOP in the chat with the name at West Ham Sufferer. They haven't asked a question, but just choosing that name for yourself is truly a cross that you bear with wonder. And I'll be thinking about you, West Ham Sufferer, this weekend. Dr. J, come on up, tell us where you are and what your question is. You've got to unmute, Dr. J. Just push the microphone. Hey!
I thought you wanted a West Ham sufferer up.
Never, never. When Dr. J is in the house, tell us where you are.
Well, I'm in Richmond, Virginia. There's a rumor you're coming down here.
I am. I'm coming to Richmond to do a reading in a bookstore, which is date TBD, but I know I am because it's on my emergency to actually organize list. So when I do come down, Dr. J, we will... What kind of a doctor are you, Dr. J?
Not the one who helps people. Kind of like... I'm a PhD in chemistry.
God bless you. And every day you do help people in your own way. We will get pints at Penny Lane. When you say you're not the kind of doctor who helps people, you're essentially the same kind of doctor as Dr. Joe. What's your question, Dr. J?
Well, I'm a Wolves supporter, probably the only one in Central Virginia. Maybe there are a couple others. But my question is actually about Newcastle. So they have a team. They have a terrible ownership, and it's dark. But I want to talk about their football. Like, they had pretty much the same. They didn't bring in a lot of players, at least a lot of players that other teams were pursuing. I mean, they weren't a lot of teams in for Chris Wood or Dan Byrne. But they are third in the Premier League. Eddie Howe is just getting performances out of players that people just never saw coming. I want to give praise to Eddie Howe as one of these stealth managers. He doesn't maybe get a lot of credit with the big names, but he's just amazing to me. I just wondered what you think.
Well, first of all, I want to say your Wolves, what a difference a manager makes. It doesn't feel like a new manager bounce for Lopetegui. It feels like having a serious manager come in and do serious work, serious tactical work, can make a big difference. Instead of, you know, the there was a trend which Everton caught the whiff of, the runt of, I hope it's the runt, of appointing, you know, one of the bright, you know, God bless, we may actually have Wayne Rooney as our next manager. But, you know, appointing a great British iconic player is a natural way to manage. Bringing in a dude who really understands football, tactics, comms to his players, man management. I really marvel at the Wolverhampton bounce. You know, Wolves, when he took them over, were hapless, hopeless, bereft. We laughed. I'll be honest, Dr. J, how we laughed, how we pitied Wolves when they were down, decrepit, cowering at the bottom of the table. And to watch their performances, I watched them midweek, and yeah, it was not a great result. And yes, Hal Lopetegui howled at the end, the final whistle when they were beaten by Liverpool. But I watched that second half, particularly the last 20 minutes, and the idea of football that was present, the passing, the ideas down the flanks, the movement, the combination play in the final third. I was watching with one of my kids who just turned to me and said, they have ideas that Everton have not even heard of. And so I do marvel at what you've done. You're asking me about Newcastle, and it is slightly more complicated. It's not an economic miracle in the same way as, to me, the Wolves story is. I mean, you look at the incoming transfers for Newcastle United in 2022, you know, a complete clearing of house. But so many of those fees were undisclosed. I mean, an enormous influx of money. No secret about where the money came in, you know, from the PIF, the Saudi Arabian PIF. And again, echoing what I said about Tottenham, it's almost the opposite direction. Tottenham, you know, the squad is thin. It cries out for replenishment. The money is not there for that. Newcastle were able to, with the influx of cash, change everything. And so these players are quality players coming in. Isak, Sven Botman, Dan Byrne. We knew he was an incredibly good defender. That was not how has he conjured a great performance out of Dan Byrne? You know, obviously Bruno G. Maresh is an incredible footballer. And Kieran Trippier has been a delight and a wonder. And I'm just picking the highlights in terms of their squad depth. So it was a great investment. Again, football, I'd hate that we're all cheering for balance sheets, but let's just say the Newcastle balance sheet changed absolutely overnight, and the squad is a complete reflection of that. But you're asking me, what do I think of Eddie Howe? And God, I mean, he's an Everton fan, number one, childhood Everton fan. And it pains me. And I wanted Eddie Howe to be the Everton manager on Saturday. I've told Eddie Howe this to Eddie Howe's face on several bloody occasions. I think he's a really thoughtful human being, a very sensitive human being. I think that, you know, when I've spoken to him, the thing I admire about him is that he talks about himself being a lifelong learner, and he talks about wanting to inculcate a learning environment at the club in every facet. Like, he never wants his players to rest on their laurels, that he wants them always to be open to improving, to learning. That's how he talks about life. And you've seen that impact with Newcastle. But the thing that has been remarkable for me about Eddie Howe, about his man management, well, first of all, remember Eddie Howe, and I think you all may know this, so I'm sorry to repeat it if you do, but he, you know, we know him as Bournemouth legend Eddie Howe. He briefly, fleetingly decamped from Bournemouth, you know, stepped off the great Bournemouth miracle story and became Burnley manager. You know, Burnley were a bigger team. It was a big step up for him. And he didn't last. It was a terrible cultural fit. It was a disaster. And he came back to Bournemouth, the club where he'd been a player. Essentially, the way he told it to me, his wife just hated the north, couldn't live up there, loved, you know, Bournemouth all the way through, didn't like it up north. So when I said to him, be the Everton manager, come be the Everton manager, Eddie, he'd like laughed. And I imagined in that laughter was a thought of going up north again. You cannot go further north than Newcastle. That is north of the wall. And I'm like, oh my God, how's his wife? How's his wife? Will somebody not think about the wife? So number one, he has developed the ability to settle way up north, which I do admire. People can change. I'm now a country person where I always thought I was deeply urban. We can all change. But the other fundamental way in which he's changed is he's become, you know, what do we remember about his Bournemouth? A optimistic, buccaneering team who leaked goals for ages. And Newcastle have become almost the opposite. Their defence is the rock on which this team is built. You know, the fewest goals conceded within the Premier League. And I look at that to be, you know, there's a lot about Newcastle. Well, to be honest, there's a lot about Newcastle I like. I love the city. I feel for the people. They're amazing. They've suffered. They've suffered economically in England as the coal mines closed and industry was just let to rot under Thatcher. That city was really discarded, like Liverpool, by the south. They have suffered up there. And so to see them revel again, there is a joy in that. The Saudi Arabian thing, we've talked a lot on the podcast, just in general, the influx of money that's allowed and the reasons why, it does give me an agony. Despite that, watching Eddie Howe do what he's done humanly is remarkable. And I wish him well. It is a complex situation. And I would love, you know, if there are Newcastle fans on an amp one night, come on, talk about how you feel. You know, there's the, in football, as a fandom, there's always the emotional and the rational. And I imagine there's a lot of both for really thoughtful Newcastle fans in the moment, seeing players that dreams are made of. And then the other thing, very quickly, that I do admire about Eddie Howe is how he's taken players who were afterthoughts at Newcastle and breathed life into them. I should say that. Joe Linton, incredible. And of course, I feel like he's a US men's national team player. I love him so much. Miggy Almiron, watching that, just joyous human being. Watching him wander around lost in the wilderness at Newcastle was a miserable experience for an effervescent human being. Watching him regain his swag, his joy, his sense of belief, his confidence, his clinicality, one of the stories of the season. And again, for that, I think we owe a debt of thanks to Eddie Howe.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
One more question from the great App Powers. Unmute, come be with us, tell us where you are, and what's your question?
Hi, Raj. It's Paul from Cambridge, Massachusetts, not too far from Billerica.
Oh, Billerica, the Revs player who's playing for Genk in the Belgian Premier League as we speak. God, I bet you a lot of Belgium scouts are listening and are very interested in young Billerica. Who's your team? Tell us what your question is.
My team is Liverpool, but I'm calling in partially to answer your question about foreign ownership. So I'm a Liverpool fan, but a Red Sox fan as well. So I have the unique pleasure of being crushed under both arms of FSG's.
For the Pittsburgh Penguins, hey.
But it's sort of unique torture because as they add more and more teams, which I don't think they're going to stop doing, you know, the budgets tighten, the owners get more and more distant. You lose players and don't replace them. I'm still caught up about Xander Bogaerts' departure from the Red Sox, but it seems to be a problem at Liverpool as well. We lose Mane, we lose some midfielders, we sign Gakpo, who, God bless him, is just a forward through and through. But my question is, are we headed in football, but in sports more generally, toward this hellscape of either conglomeration under, you know, ownership that owns five teams, or these public investment funds, which you know, increase your transfer budget by $400 million, but leave that bitter taste of autocracy?
God, you get the bitter taste of autocracy. If only autocracy didn't have that bitter taste, huh? Do you want me to do a deep dive on Rush Fenway Keselowski Racing?
I'm so glad that you know exactly what that is.
How are they doing? That's Fenway Sports Group. Yay, Rush Fenway Keselowski. How are they doing? NASCAR fans, tell us in the chat how they're doing, because that's another Fenway Sports property. God, by the way, the Bitter Taste of Autocracy is an incredible name for an emo band, if any of you are looking for one. You know, again, I talked about this a little bit last night, and I feel like I've hit it probably too hard. And I'm thinking about this a lot, to be honest, at Powers, because of obviously Everton football clubs. I'm mulling the options. And I've probably, in the past 8 months, spoken to about a dozen investing groups who are thinking of buying or kicking the tires on or pretending that they're thinking of buying or pretending they're kicking the tires on Everton Football Club. Some very nice people, some people who clearly don't know anything about football or what they're doing, and they're just joining the gold rush that's currently occurring of American investors flooding over to European football. A lot of them, I'd say one out of three of them is interested in putting together what you mentioned, like a football network, like Manchester City, where you know, they buy not just one team, but they buy six or seven teams. From an investor perspective, you get economies of scale, you get to merge back offices, you get unique inbuilt competitive advantages, you get a route for youth development. The idea is, you know, you've got an academy in Mozambique, and then you move your players from there to your team in Brazil, and then you move them to your team in Belgium so they can establish European residency and then get into the Premier League. I mean, there's all kinds of ideas. I am yet to be convinced by any of them or see any of them. And the second reality, and I talked about this at length yesterday when I talked about the the documentary series that I managed to ruin for so many of you viewers. It's fantastic. Apart from my contributions to it, The War for Football on Apple Plus, which relives the 48 hours of the Super League, but really ask the question that you've asked. Is that the option? Is that all we have for football to look forward to, that to truly compete at the upper ether? What do you need? Do you need? I mean, we've seen FSG, who you are, you know, I admire what FSG have done in many ways. I want to be clear, like their learning curve as American owners, when you think about who came before them, Hicks and Gillette, two Americans who arrived in Liverpool and immediately said to the press, "We love the Liverpool Reds." They really said that at their opening press conference and just continued to descend from there. Probably my favorite Liverpool owners of all time, those two, took the club to the brink of bankruptcy. In came FSG. And the way FSG learned by doing, I really admire. But what we're seeing, and the frustration for you inherent in your question, is even they, these American investors with real sport, a sense of sports strategy, with really bright staff, they cannot hope to compete in the way you want them to compete. You need them to compete relentlessly, consistently in that top four. When they are going up against, as you say, the bitter taste of autocracy, sovereign states, American sports investors, just that's where the Super League even, you know, came to be for the teams that drove it, the American owners, Glazer, Kroenke, and FSG. They realized for all of their wealth, and they are incredible. I mean, the two of those own NFL teams. Two of those are the, you know, NFL owners are the kings of the American sporting scene. Even they are pale into insignificance when they're fighting a battle against the infinite fleshy wallet that is a nation state. And that's where we are. So you're asking a question, is that the only future? That's the, really the question. Is that what has to happen for your team to be competitive now, that you are taken over as a tool for an autocracy? And just asking the question is bloody heartbreaking. I mean, I'm thinking about it a lot for Everton. Is it better to live by your values? By the way, we're not living by our values at the moment. I think Mashiri is a madman. And we can talk about Everton on another AMP. And we've talked about him a lot this week. But I would rather they live by their values and struggle and suffer than to realize that, yeah, it's either autocracy or nothing. If it is autocracy or nothing, football, which is already deeply problematic, I mean, I can't even complete that sentence. If it is autocracy or nothing, football becomes what, is how I will leave it for us on the AMP tonight. And it's been a beautiful AMP. It's been a heavy AMP. It's been an AMP of wonder. Tomorrow, we are going to do a weekend preview. But I want to end tonight by raising a final shot of Jägermeister to, and I think this is fitting for the tone, to the memory of Charlotte FC defender Anton Walkes. Tragic news out there this morning that Walkes passed away after a boating accident in Florida, which took place during pre-season training. I can't imagine the horror. Walkes was a 25-year-old Englishman, a former Tottenham Academy and first team player, came to MLS initially in 2017 to play for that delirious new Atlanta United inaugural season. I'd say our deepest sympathies to the Walkes family, to everyone in the Charlotte and MLS community. This passing, a reminder, as if we needed one, of just how fragile and short and unexpected life can be, and a reminder that we should be kind while there's still time. Big love from me, Rog. Big love from all of us at Men in Blazers. We'd love to just say a quick word to all of you on this AMP and listen to this podcast. Go to our YouTube page, find our Trent Alexander-Arnold interview, which just dropped a few minutes ago. It's great to speak with Trent about the complexities of Liverpool's difficult season, his connection to America. Yes, that's right. Trent could have been a baby eagle. And you'll also hear what his American mother thinks of his new Calvin Klein ad with him in his undies. So much going up on our YouTube right now. Please subscribe. We've got a Bukayo Saka interview in the edit as we speak. J-Dubs is going to jump right back into that. We'll drop up there imminently. I'll be back tomorrow with a episode of our weekend preview WGFOP. Call in your questions, 646-450-9472. Big, big love. This felt like a hug for me. Hope it has for you too. Courage.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.